Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Adam and I started working together back in 2009 or 10, and so we've been working together for a long time. We do only estate planning, and he likes the tech end quite a bit, so he will look what type of software and programs we can use, especially more recently AI, to make our job more efficient. And so anytime that we interact with a client, it captures a comprehensive version of what the discussion contained, mm-hmm. and then can implement that into not only our notes, but further on into the planning that we do. And it's pretty interesting. And he had a really cool experience. I don't know if you want to share your experience that you had with AI. I don't know if it was yesterday or 2 days ago when you asked it about a bucket list.
It wasn't that cool.
What are you talking about?
It's not cool enough to share. Let me get this close.
Okay.
I've been using AI for ChatGPT. I use all sorts of different ones for different things, but ChatGPT tends to be my go-to for like getting started with something.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing it for such a long time. It like knows me really well. And so I asked it a question yesterday. I asked it,
what am I going to regret if I die?
If I were to regret anything when I'm about to die, what would I regret if I don't like fix it now? And it gave me five things. And when I was reading those, I was like, oh my gosh, that really like staggered to the heart.
Spot on.
Well, I didn't even know I didn't know it, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, it was spot on in the sense of when I read it, I thought, yeah, I mean, I've never verbalized it. I've never even thought about it really deeply, but yeah, I can see myself like, oh yeah, I should have not done that. And then my follow-up was, can I make this my strength? And it's like, absolutely you can. Here's how to be diligent about doing this and this and this. So I don't have those regrets. It was pretty interesting. It was like a come to Jesus moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing and scary at the same time. Noah had to do a biography for me or a bio, you know, just a quick one page sketch. And I've been submitting bios every time I do a presentation for some type of continuing education course. And I've submitted dozens of them. And each time I do, I take a quick look at it and I revise it. It shows, you know, what credentials I have and what groups I'm part of and what courses I've taught in the past, how many estate plans I've done, things like that. And so I thought I was pretty good. I thought I had it pretty polished. And he showed me the one that it came up with in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I quickly adopted it, changed maybe a sentence, and then submitted it back up because I'm going to do another continuing education course in San Diego here in July. And I adopted that one. It was way better. Like ChatGPT did my bio way better than the one that I've been revising for 13 years. So is that crazy?
It's crazy.
Have you had any experiences with AI? Let me get an introduction from you. What do you do?
So I am a nursing home administrator
mm-hmm.
here in the state of Arizona. Previously, I was operating in Idaho. I've been in healthcare since about 2015, I've been in hospitals, durable medical equipment, oxygen therapy, and CPAPs, BiPAPs, ventilators, and then got my master's and eventually ended up in skilled nursing. And so I run a facility for rehabilitation and long-term care for those who can't care for themselves anymore.
So in town, the facility is called Haven of Sandpoint,
mm-hmm.
and we won't talk about the irony there. But there is one.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to talk about it.
Now I'm curious.
You bring it up in the,
yeah.
Yeah. So I'm from Sandpoint, Idaho, and I was raised there. And my wife was born and raised in Yuma, Arizona. And there are two facilities for Haven Health.
Mm-hmm.
And one is called Haven of Yuma. The other is called Haven of Sandpoint. And if that was it, that would not be really significant, but there's so many ties. Every single week we seem to have a tie back to this corridor in Sandpoint, Idaho, to Yuma, Arizona. And that's unique because Yuma is not a destination location. And neither, well, Sandpoint, Idaho is just for visitation, mm-hmm. but it's only a town of a population of less than 10,000. So to have so many similarities is unique. Sorry, so I cut in. So you, why nursing home administration? Because specifically that's what you focus on, right?
Yeah. Yep. So I focus on the operation. I have multiple different departments and I'm in charge of trying to make sure that everyone has what they need to operate smoothly. Mm-hmm. And I chose that. It's like I kind of lucked into it, I guess. It's like I said before, I was in hospital. I was on an OR management team, doing metrics, other things like that, payroll. And everyone I saw was just asleep. I didn't get any interaction with really any awake patients. Then durable medical equipment. I was able to manage a small team there and make a little bit of a difference. But I was really looking at how can I make the biggest difference? Growing up, I never thought I was smart enough to become a nurse or a doctor or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know what, maybe I'll look at the business side of it. And that's how I kind of ended up in healthcare administration. And I mean, my grandmother ended up in one of these facilities in Idaho Falls, and I visited her almost daily and got to talking with the administrator there. And he kind of gave me the steps.
How old were you when you were visiting her?
I was at Lincare, actually. I'd been in nursing homes before then, but that kind of made me start focusing on quality of care. How does it operate? What does an administrator do in that type of setting? And just talking with that administrator really opened up my mind to be like, hey, I would be interested in something like this.
How old were you?
I was probably about 30.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you'd already been doing different careers and kind of looking to see what was your calling in life. Mm-hmm. And when you started visiting her and seeing how the functionality of that hospital was going, you thought that might be something that you would do. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I think each of us have gone through, each of us sitting here have gone through that mentality that we're not smart enough, or we don't have the background or the pedigree to do these professional careers. And this is a big part of why I like to continue doing this radio show. We started it out doing it just to advertise our services and encourage people to come and hire us to do estate planning. But it's really transformed into a platform for big things that we think on social issues that we think need to be, talked about in a less biased way than are talked about on most podcasts. And also a way to put out there that people, especially younger listeners that are listening to this, that feel like they have maybe lost out on that American dream, that opportunity that was there for their parents, they haven't. And I'm a testament to that. I graduated high school barely. I probably just honestly out of the charity of the administrators of the high school did I graduate and did not want to go back to school at all. Mm. And then when I was 22, I went back to community college. I went to community college for the first time and began my further education. And now I love learning. I will never stop learning, and I love it. And I'm an estate planning attorney, which sounds like the most boring job you could have, but I love doing it. And Adam, you kind of went through a similar path.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to that. We all feel like we're not good enough or smart enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I went through the same thing. I was never going to go to school. I didn't have enough money. I wasn't smart enough, that kind of stuff, but ended up doing it. I went on a church mission. I know Sean did. Did you?
Yeah, yep,
I did. Where did you go?
Brazil.
Oh, nice.
What part?
Fortaleza, Brazil.
Oh, yeah, okay.
To the Bane.
To the Bane.
Yeah. And so I'm sure when you went through that experience, you're like, wait a second, I can do some stuff when you got back. Right.
Yeah.
Was it that really transformed your mentality, or did it take a little bit longer after you returned and saw yourself participating in the careers that you were working in and looking at people around you and saying, you know what? They're not better, smarter, harder working than I am. Whereas before, as kids, we kind of look up at those individuals and we think they must have something that I don't or won't have. Did you have that type of aha moment that I can do this?
It's like, I'd say that the mission definitely helped with that mentality. I think what it gave me mostly is like, I was in like dirt floors area and just realizing how lucky I was mm-hmm. to have the opportunities that I've been given. And coming back and realizing
being born where you were in the United States mm-hmm. and even, I don't know, you know, how affluent your family was, but regardless, being in the favelas in Brazil, you see there's a whole new level of poverty.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Teaching lessons by candlelight and stuff like that. I'm just like, man, I am lucky to have hot water, AC, food on the table, and parents that love me and support me and encourage me to do better and be better. And I mean, it really changed my mindset on that. And I came back home realizing that, like, you know what? It's like, I can do, like, I have opportunities. Let's make something of it.
Do you come from a big family?
I have four brothers. So five boys.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, five boys. I'm the oldest of five boys. Also the tallest.
You're the oldest.
Yeah, so yeah, oldest, tallest, best looking. So
yes.
Like nice. I got it all. Got
nice.
It all. My poor
the,
brothers.
The genetic leftovers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what my brothers call me.
And they're pretty accurate. Yeah.
I'm the baby. So.
Yeah. So yeah, it's family of seven. Like, and that's what I grew up with.
And what do your parents, or what do your parents, are they retired? Are they continuing
to work? Yeah. So my dad's kind of semi-retired. Mm-hmm. My mom is retired. She was an elementary school teacher.
Did she ever teach one of your classes?
No. It's like she was second grade when I was kindergarten. Then when I got closer, she flipped and went down to kindergarten.
On purpose?
I think so.
Oh.
I mean, as a student, I was a bit rambunctious and yeah. It's like, but I mean, my dad, he had a bunch of different business ventures. I mean, he opened some some cell phone and tech businesses down in Idaho Falls.
What years? Like, was that early cell phones really blew up, or was that in the...
I'm not quite sure. I can't quite remember. I was in college by then.
Because it seems like cell phones blew up overnight. I remember I left Brazil in 98 and I came back home in 2000. Mm-hmm. And in 98, you were like the rich elite to have mm-hmm. a cell phone. And in 2000, you were the nobody if you didn't have a cell phone.
Yeah.
I was like, what just mm-hmm. happened? Like, I totally missed that.
It was probably early 2000s.
Okay. So
he was just selling, he had a storefront selling cell phones, accessories. I'm trying to just, capitalize on the boom
mm-hmm.
a little bit. And before that he was with advertising and Pepsi, worked for Pepsi. I loved that time because when I was little he would always come home with like cases of soda.
Really?
Yeah. It's especially around Halloween, like the kids got root beer and the adults got Pepsi.
That's awesome.
And then we were left with whatever was left over. And so uh-huh. it was like Halloween was like the best time of year.
So Nukaya, where do you guys come from?
Japanese, yeah. Of Japanese descent. I'm fourth generation Japanese American. It was my great grandparents, great grandfathers on both sides. And it's kind of they lived in some fishing villages
mm-hmm.
north and just south of Kobe, Japan. Now they're all just enveloped by Kobe because it's gotten so big. But same story, they both came over. Worked a little bit on the farms, I believe, and then went back, married their sweethearts, and then brought them back to
the United. Did they get to Idaho?
You know, I don't know. It's like there's a lot of farming opportunity in Idaho.
Yeah.
That's what my grandfather did.
But is there a big Japanese population where you grew up?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, like, yeah.
In Idaho Falls?
Well, it's not like booming and enormous, but
sure,
I mean,
but there's a community.
There's a community.
Uh-huh.
Like there's a bunch of different families. There's Nukayas, Yugakis, Matsuras, Yamagatas. I mean, just a whole bunch of different Japanese families. And we're all related somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and yeah.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Have you gone to Japan?
I haven't, no. All four of my brothers got called to Japan.
Shut on the missions. Up.
Yeah, I was wow. like, so.
You're like, Brazil? I know. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
They all got called to Japan, and my parents actually went over with like my grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, and to pick two of them up because one of them waited a year, and then they ended up going out on the same day, which was my wife's birthday, or they got the call, I believe, on my birthday, and then they left on July 13th, which was my wife's birthday.
Wow.
Same year, and then so they served at the same time.
Two brothers serving at the exact same time. And I don't think I've ever heard of that except twins.
Yeah. And so, I mean, my parents went and picked them up and they invited me, but I was in finals in college and trying to be responsible and stuff. And so they all got to have the Japan experience. And I just,
but you're not bitter about it.
Oh no, not at all. No, I don't think about it a lot.
Exactly. Every night.
Just at night.
Yeah, just at night. When I can't sleep.
You cry yourself to sleep.
Japan!
So close.
Well, I've never been to Japan either, if it makes you feel better.
Oh, yeah, what? It does.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't fix anything. I have been seeing cheap flights there, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, my wife subscribes to like this cheap flight thingy.
Mm-hmm.
So every day we get like bing, bing, these bings and pretty good cheap flights, like $500 to Japan. I would say that's cheap.
Yeah, I'd say. Right.
That's got to be a long flight.
Yeah. I'm imagining it's probably 16 hours, probably.
Would you fly west?
Yeah,
you fly west to go to Japan?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I believe you do.
So tell me more about what you do at Haven of Sandpoint.
So
what's your day look like? So you're going in today.
Going in today.
Everybody's high-fiving you.
You've got these
Jack.
You got these sweet Jordans on.
What's up, boss?
So you got a pickup game at lunch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do the underlings, like, here comes Jack, they dart off, everybody like roaches, or do they come out and they give you high fives? What kind of boss are you?
It's like, I'm going around. There's some employees that like some coworkers that I'm able to like give a fist bump to and be like, hey, how's it going? And like, be really friendly. Others who might not know me as well. They might clam up a little bit or just like put their head down and keep doing their work. But for the most part, I feel like, I'm like pretty friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and people know that they can joke around with me. I like to have a good time, and it's like, unless you're doing something like really, really wrong, I'm gonna be like, I'm not gonna be too strict.
Micromanage what they do.
Like I tend to trust people and like that they know what they need to be doing, and if I'm around and they're doing what they need to be doing, fantastic.
Because in that field, there's so many areas of specialty where the nurses that have been there develop this real skill to care for their patients, understand what's going on, like sense what needs to be done without being told. And those people are just so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that in every field, but especially with nursing homes, because a lot of the patients there don't have the ability to clearly communicate their needs.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, and I have a great management team right now that I just trust and lean on a lot. My director of nursing just I was writing her, it was Nurses Week last week. Mm-hmm. And I was writing her a little note, and like what came to mind is just like, you know what? You always know what to do. Like, no matter the situation, whatever's going on, whatever's hitting the fan, it's like she always knows how to stay calm and just be like, you know what? This is our next step, and this is what we need to do, how to take care of this resident. These are the evaluations we need, the specialists we need to, the referrals we need to send out to specialists and stuff. And I mean, it's just, it's so valuable having someone like that and a team like that. So
what advice do you have, I guess, to people who are afraid of that destination? Is that valid? Is that a valid fear that, you know, I know I don't want to end up in a nursing home, and I'd rather just die at home, or I'd rather have family take care of me. Is that a stigma that is based in reality, or is it overhyped?
You know, before I got into skilled nursing, it's like I always thought that like, oh, this is the place where people just go to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And they're horrible conditions, and I mean, being there would be the saddest thing on earth, you know. It's like, but after being in one and operating one, when you have a good team and good staff, they're trying to make that place as home-like as possible, because that's one of our regulations. But we don't do it because it's regulation. We a lot of us get into this because we have loved ones that we've taken care of in the past, and we want to try and make this as good of an experience as possible. Now, their feelings of a fear of ending up in a place like that, absolutely unfounded. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a scary experience. It is a change of environment. Oftentimes people are at their lowest, they're confused, they're hurting, they're in pain. I mean, some of these facilities, especially during COVID, you couldn't have visitors.
Yeah.
So going in there all alone and just not having anyone there is terrifying. It's like, I would not want to be in that type of situation, but it's a reality of our world that people end up in that scenario often. And we just want to be able to provide that space and of comfort for them, not only physically, but emotionally, so that people can heal. And
get yeah, it's, we were talking a little bit before we started recording about the absolute need. I have clients very frequently that will decline in health over years, and from the time that I originally met them to the point where they're ready to pass, they need some full-time care. And at home, it would literally destroy the home life entirely if they were have to stay at home, because they've got either dementia so bad or their physical ailment is so bad that it would destroy the health of their spouse who's caring for them, or somebody else who's caring for them. And they need somebody that is dedicated full time to provide that care for them. And there's state assistance for that. We talked a little bit about that, but I don't know. It seems like there's the statistics of people developing Alzheimer's or dementia and living longer periods of time with those diseases and needing long-term care are on the rise. Do you know anything, know any statistics about that, or just have you seen that type of uptick?
I don't know any statistics specifically about that, but I can tell you that at our facility, we have a dementia Alzheimer's unit.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it is always full, and we always have a wait list. I mean, it is in high demand. There is a definite need for it, and we're actually looking at opening another wing for it.
The last I looked at the statistics, and that's been maybe 5-10 years ago, but it was 66% approximately of Americans will go through a phase of disability, whether it's a physical disability or a mental, you know, brought on by mental disability, Alzheimer's, dementia, that they are unable to care for themselves and manage their own affairs, and that period lasts on average about 2 years
before they die.
Yeah. So wow. It's a majority of us that are going to go through a period of incapacity for 2 years. So if you don't have some sort of planning in place where somebody can make decisions for you and get you in the facility that you need to be, get the care that you need to have with that legal authority, with that healthcare authority, then it's really tough on your family. Now, you having Alzheimer's might not even be aware what's going on.
Yeah.
But it's your family members that are really having to pick up the load. Have you seen a difference between people that have come in and are prepared with a power of attorney and their estate planning in order compared to those that have nothing or just kind of scrambling to make decisions and try to navigate the legal path of getting somebody admitted that they don't have authority to speak for?
I have seen both sides of that. I have a licensed social worker, and she mostly deals with that. But we'll talk about it in meetings and things like that. We'll usually hear about how difficult it is. And I mean, we have daily meetings to go over the progress of how these things are going and these applications and whatnot.
So what is your policy? Because there's a lot of misnomers out there about whether or not people can speak on behalf of relatives or spouse or loved ones. And what is your policy about being able to disclose medical information and have somebody sign on behalf of a potential patient without legal documentation?
So usually it'll fall to the next of kin. We'll look at hospital documents, see who the decision maker was there at their facility. We'll also do our own, it's called a BIMS assessment. It helps just measure their cognition and how much they remember, how cognitively aware they are. And if they score low on a BIMS scale, then it kind of indicates that cognitively they're not able to make their own decisions. And we'll start looking at like next of kin, family members, whoever can help make those decisions, or hopefully, like you said, they have a power of attorney, which.
So if they've got those documents in place, I mean, what's the sentiment of your staff or the social workers when they're able to look at the documentation and it's there?
Oh, it's such a comfort to just know that, boom, we have someone, we can go to them, we can get the decisions quickly, and there isn't a large step before that. Yeah.
So it's interesting because you mentioned you look at, I guess, what has been done in the previous doctor's decisions or medical decisions that were done for the patient, and that we all know that there's the law and then there's real life. And at some point they have to kind of meet in the middle. And so we try to help people get their documents legally up to date, but then help them understand when you're actually going to need to use these, call us first. Because we've been through thousands of these, every different type of scenario, and we know what the banks are looking for. And some banks will accept this document and other banks this. When it's a financial institution like a for retirement accounts, they're going to look for this documentation. And so there's policies, like you mentioned, your policy is to look back at, you know, what had happened and the precedent for decision making for that patient. And so it's helpful for us to understand what the policies are of the different types of institutions, especially nursing homes, when it gets down to the nitty gritty and the actual who's making the decision and who is going to be the one that steps up to the plate.
How long have you been working in these types of facilities?
Since 2020. It's like I started
5 years-ish.
Yeah, 5 years, yeah.
So you've seen a lot of people pass away, right?
Yeah.
What's fascinating to me is I hear this a lot. It's not just like once or twice. It's like I've heard several times when a person is about to pass away, oftentimes they'll, like the nurses will go in and these people will be talking about people that have already died or talking to them. Have you ever heard of that or seen that?
It's like of nurses talking with?
No, the patient. And the nurse witnesses it.
Yeah.
Like somebody of sound mind witnesses somebody who is on the throes of death.
Yeah.
Like passing through the veil.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard that before? 5 years, Jack, you haven't heard that?
Like,
I don't even work in those facilities. I hear it all the time.
I'm still trying to understand. So while someone's passing, mm-hmm. a nurse talking to them.
They're having
days before
a spiritual experience with somebody that has passed on before them.
Or not only that, they're calling out. A lot of times they'll be calling out to parents, or they'll be calling out to people that have already died. And then lo and behold, they die within a day or two. If you have to search that hard, never mind.
I'm trying to think of.
I was looking for some awesome experiences.
A specific instance where a nurse has been this person was talking to their.
Maybe that's a topic for your next meeting.
I want to ask
the nurses, hey, when somebody's about to die, come and get me. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Because.
Just hang around.
Have you? You've experienced that. I've experienced that.
Yeah.
And it's in. I haven't been around death very much, but it's actually more common than not that the person you see that they are looking beyond. They're looking 100 miles down the road, and they are being greeted by somebody that has passed on before. And when you hear those, it always kind of gives me the chills to remember. And I'm visualizing right now some of the experiences that I've had. But that probably, to me, is the biggest faith builder, even though I brought up in a very staunch religious setting, the biggest faith builder is the experiences that I've witnessed.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
I wanted to ask you, getting back to your path in life, how did you make these big decisions? How did you came to a crossroads, you went on your mission to Brazil, you came back, and now you got to figure out life, right? What am I going to do when I grow up? And who do I marry? That's the biggest decision you got to make.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So how did you, what's your pattern for those that are listening
So my pattern, I got home from my mission and my plan was just to date for a year. I was going to BYU Idaho and I did not want to just be a typical BYU Idaho story of get home, get married and move on with life. But I mean, I met a girl right when I got home.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a list
of what that
blonde hair, blue eyes?
No, I didn't really have a list.
Britney Spears.
No, I didn't have a list. I was like,
Britney Spears was just you, Adam.
It was not just you, Adam.
you, Jack.
You're welcome. Yeah, young Jack was all was very jealous of who was it? Justin Timberlake.
Yeah,
that guy. Still jealous of him.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like, but
until there's a Diddy story behind him too. I'm sure of it.
I'm sure.
getting home, I did not have a list of attributes. I just was looking to date around and have fun. And really I was just looking for someone that, sometimes I can be very sarcastic and I was kind of looking for someone who can get my sarcasm and just be kind of cool and to hang out with. I mean, I didn't.
So where's your wife from?
Specific. She was born in England.
What?
She was born in England. She was a military child.
I was just going to
ask. Her father was a colonel in the Air Force. He flew those C-130s.
Okay.
And then when they were really young, they moved to, the way that her parents put it, the most beautiful place that they could remember visiting, and that was Idaho Falls.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah. And so they moved to Idaho Falls. She grew up in Idaho Falls since she was 3 years old, something like that.
No accent.
We like to, she is Caucasian brunette. And so for those of you listening, I'm Japanese. And so our running joke for a while was she was the one that needed the green card in the marriage. It just happened to fall into place where I thought she was just awesome. She was a student. She was working at the financial aid office and I had to go sign some papers to get some financial aid. And she was the one that helped me. I didn't even have a phone or anything. And I just asked her name and creepily Facebook stalked her afterwards.
Is this that you met
this
her?
This was 2009, end of 2009 when I met her.
Uh-huh.
And I actually had a girlfriend at the time.
Oops.
Yep. Yep.
That's good news. Nobody listens to this show.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Sorry.
But that's par for the course, right? I mean,
you're
dating mm-hmm. to find who your spouse is. So yeah. like the fact that you had a girlfriend that wasn't your eventual spouse is no surprise.
Yeah. So it's like, started hanging out with her cause my girlfriend went on a study abroad to Costa Rica. Said like, hey,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So, and like, while I was on my mission, she dated around and then she was going to Costa Rica. She's like, you know what? You date around. Like, okay, cool. And then I ended up meeting Jacqueline and we started dating really seriously. And Jacqueline found out I had a girlfriend.
I forgot about that. So it's Jack and Jacqueline.
Yeah. Yep.
Has that carried on through your kids' names?
No. Like my son's middle name is Jack.
Okay.
My wife wanted that, but our kids, no J names.
Oh
yeah.
How many kids do you have?
I've got 4 kids.
Uh-huh.
Like I've got 3 girls and 1 boy. The girls are 14, 7 and 5. And my boy is 11 years old now. So
when you're talking to your kids, have you run into those moments when you're like, listen, anything is possible. You can do anything you want. And if so how do you approach that conversation with them?
You know, we just try and like, they're really driven kids. I feel like they know what they want to do in life, especially my son. Every single time it's like, hey, what do you want to do when you grow up? He's like, mm-hmm. I want to be a neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
He's like,
okay. Love it.
I was like, okay.
Yes.
Like, sure. And I'm like the naysayer. I'm like, hey, yeah. Are you sure? Are you like positive? It's going to be a lot of hard work. And he's just like, no, like I want to do that and I'm going to be that. And it's like, cool. And so, and my daughter wants to go into,
I mean, you can't go wrong with that. I mean, you shoot for neurosurgery. You end up, you know, a podiatrist. You're still doing pretty good.
Yeah. I was like, you know, I'm good with that. Like I never had, we were talking about it, like, I never had that level of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So I never shot that high.
Same here.
I was always just like, well, I'm just going to be something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, we'll see where I fall. I never had that drive. And so I'm just really proud of my son for having that type of mentality.
What do you attribute that to?
You know, I'm not sure. Mom? It's like, yeah, definitely mom. Yeah. Like, she is in a, she, her brothers and her family. She's number 12 of 13.
Holy smokes.
Families like that always have some amazing,
like, and so marrying
survivors.
Yeah, marrying into that family was so just intimidating. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have some world-class professors who travel to Europe to talk about economics and things like that and give lectures on that. We have some aerospace engineers, some nuclear engineers, just civil engineers, just engineers across the board.
There's something about huge families like that mm-hmm. that creates just a dogmatic drive to survive and thrive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, you know what? I'd say probably my brother-in-law, Seth, he is a nuclear engineer
mm-hmm.
now. And we lived with him for about a year while my in-laws were on a mission. We lived in their house and then he graduated his bachelor's and came to live with us as well. And so he was around my son a lot. He was home a lot. And he was able to just kind of help mold him into someone who has a mindset to be driven. So I'm very grateful for that brother-in-law because I think that's probably where it came from. Him.
Really?
Him and Seth and my wife, Jacqueline.
Do you think as you're telling this story, it reminds me that I feel like my kids are more responsive to my brothers or to my wife's brothers, like their uncles,
mm-hmm.
than they are to me. Like if I were to tell them, hey, you can be a neurosurgeon, like Dr. Strange,
mm-hmm.
they'd be like, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But when my brother says it to them, then they actually believe it. Because
mm-hmm.
honestly, when they tell me, I was going to ask you, like when they told you I'm going to be a neurosurgeon, if my son told me that secretly, I'd be like, yeah, right. Good luck with that. You know, but.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I was in that boat, but you know, the more he says it, the more I'm like, dude, you're going to manifest that.
Yes.
Like you have focused on that so much that I'm sure that you're on that track.
Do you feel like you have a lot to live up with or live up to with your in-laws? Like you've got so many
Yeah, you're under the microscope with them.
You know,
you're like, oh man.
They, my wife always says that, like, they love me more than her.
It's like, really? Well, I never got that. Yeah, I'll tell you, like, I never, ever once heard that from my in-laws.
So every time we're like, we have a serious talk or something like that, and like we go to my father-in-law for, he's a patriarch, and so we go to my father-in-law and we just talk to him about things going on in our lives, troubles I'm going through, troubles Jackson's going through.
So for our listeners, patriarchs, is a calling in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that is very unique. There's one per stake, so generally like one for every 2,000 members, 2,000, 3,000 members, and they're designated to give blessings to individuals to help them understand what God has in store for them in their lives. And so they're direct conduits for each of the members to God and what lies in store for them. So a patriarch is a very unique and spiritual individual. Sorry, so I had to just give that aside. So you're talking context to your father-in-law, who's a patriarch.
Yeah, okay? And so his counsel and his words have always been very much like, you know what, you're a great man, Jack. Like, you're doing the right things in your life. You're making good decisions, and you know, so like, just keep going. You're gonna make it. And so he's been very encouraging. I've never felt judged by them.
Man, you hit the lottery with in-laws.
I really did. It's like,
do you think that can make or break I don't want to say marriage, but if your in-laws
hold you to such a high standard and then you feel like you don't meet it, then you just give up.
Yeah. It could be crippling. Yeah. If they were on the other side, like, I'm so like,
that's your personality.
Yeah, my personality. I'm so people pleasing. Mm-hmm. Like, if they were like, "Man, you are not good enough for my daughter. Like, what are you doing? You're living in our house."
Welcome to my life, Jack.
I would have been just crushed. You know, I would have been like, "Oh my gosh, like, I am
a
loser."
You can handle it.
Yeah,
I'll tell you from experience. Hey, you can pull through.
Like, my father-in-law talks to me and says like how amazing I am and like just pushing forward. And then my wife's like, okay, now do me. Now honest time with me. Yeah. He's just like, you married a great man.
Oh my gosh.
Please take care of him. I will take care of your daughter, but thank you.
Yeah. We actually do run into that once in a while when we're doing estate planning that we'll talk about okay, your child's going to inherit this much. And if they pass away before you, do you want it to go to your grandkids or their spouse? And sometimes they're like, yeah, definitely the spouse. In fact, if we could name the spouse ahead of our child, we would. Mm-hmm. And so it does happen. It's rare.
Yeah.
It is rare, but it does happen.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I was going to say that same thing. I mean, I think I don't ever give that option first because it's kind of rare. Usually I'll say, well, what happens if this person dies? They're going to go down their bloodline back to the other kids. I never give the option of a spouse. So if they were to bring up a spouse, then it's kind of like ultra rare because I'm not going to offer that. Most people are like, no, I wanted to keep it in my bloodline.
Yeah. And we, you know, in our society, spouse, you know, 50% likelihood that they're not going to be the spouse.
You're saying because of divorce?
Yeah. Yeah. Later on down the road. But grandchildren are always grandchildren.
Yeah. It's
and
the bloodline.
Exactly. So we get a lot of interesting stories. What's, I think, it's always interesting to hear somebody say, you've probably never heard something like this before. And then they'll go through the scenario that I've heard like three times that week.
Yeah, exactly.
And I said, I'd tell them, people don't come to me because everything in their life is going great. Mm-hmm. People don't come to me because everybody in the family is getting along. And it's the first marriage and there's only children from this marriage and the children all have their lives in order. Those aren't my typical clients. Mm-hmm. So let's hear what you got to say. And I probably have a pretty good plan or an outline that we can help you work through this. So
a lot of times they'll apologize. You ever find this? Like they'll go through this whole story of why they're disinheriting one of their kids. I'm like, I really don't care. You can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need the whole 15-20 minute story, you know, like,
no, they
say, I don't they, like
they
him.
Feel guilty.
I don't want them to get anything. I don't care. It's your plan, not mine. You know, no, but I, people, they feel bad about that and they have to, like get it out.
Mm-hmm.
Why or justify it. It's like, you don't need to justify. You can do whatever you want. It's your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You can leave it to whoever you want it to go to. If you want to, you know, cut out this son or daughter.
Power or all of them. Yeah.
For all of them.
Give it to charity.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Give it to the dog.
We do have a lot of pets getting large inheritances, or maybe not specific pets, but pets in general, like Humane Society and pet organizations.
It's usually kids first. What is that? St. Jude's?
Yeah. St. Jude's, Crossroads and then, Mission.
And then Humane Society.
Uh-huh.
Those are the
They, what is it called? Wounded Warriors.
Yeah, Wounded Warriors.
It's a lot of it.
They had some bad press, so that went away for a little while. I don't know if it's come back, but.
Mm.
But that's all the time we have for today. Can we get you back?
Absolutely. This has been great.
Very good.
You guys.
We'll see you at the movies. Lilo and Stitch.
Yep, Lilo and June. Stitch. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
soft commit. That was soft.
So, Jack, let me make sure I'm pronouncing your name right. Jack Nukaya?
Jack Nukaya.
Nukaya.
Yep. And actually, it's like there's Nukaya, Nukaya. I actually asked my grandfather once. I'm like, how do we say our last name? He's like, I don't even know.
Yeah.
No way.
He's kind of like
Japanese is phonetic, just like.
And I guess there's different kanji of Nukaya and of what it could be. And like, so I asked someone once and they said it could be a rice market, I want to say.
So your last name itself is
could be Rice something. Market. Yeah, it could be Rice Market.
I was going to ask you.
And my middle name is Fumio, and I was told that could be Big River,
depending
on the country.
Okay.
So I could be Big River Rice Market. Could be my name.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you are the director of Haven of Sandpoint,
mm-hmm.
and thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Good luck with everything.
Hey, appreciate it.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.